Over in Genesis chapter 40, the life of Joseph poses several questions. One question out of a two-year period in his life asks us the question of, are you willing to wait for God? We could say wait for God to open a door, wait for God to do the work that he knows is best to do, however you want to phrase it. But sometimes we think that the time frame of some of those other verses, like that are in Matthew 14, Matthew 15, or John 14 and John 15, excuse me, where Jesus says, ask whatever you will and it'll be done to you, has an instantaneous time frame. Well, it takes as long for God to answer it as it does, you know, for me to, pour a cup of coffee and drink it, kind of a thing. Well, it's obviously not that way. But over in Genesis chapter 39, it says now in verse 19, when the master heard the words of his wife, when she had spoken to him, saying, this is what your slave did to me, his anger, that is Potiphar, his anger burned. So Joseph's master took him and put him into jail, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. He was there in jail. You go down to the end of verse 40. Verse 23 or verse 22, it says, but he hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had interpreted to them, yet the cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. In other words, he's still in jail. You think to yourself, you know, well, I thought we had the formula of good things happen to good people, you be nice and do things to God, and he is really faithful to bang things out, so to speak, for you to just work things out. But that's one of the most important things about Genesis chapter 40 and this question is, are you willing to wait for God as you enter into this new year? God is going to ask you to wait for him to work. You can think of some of the things that maybe you might want to change about your life setting. And I'm not talking about buying a winning lottery ticket or something like that. But I mean, you know, we all have people. Not every one of us has someone that we have an irregular relationship to, where everything is not just perfect and hunky-dory, and other, there's a little bit of angst in there. And man, I wish things were a little bit different. We all have those kind of situations. We all have things that we're worried about. We don't know when the pink slip, so to speak, is going to fall in some cases. We're not sure about how the reorganization is going to affect our life. We don't know about whether some of the work that you do is going to be recognized. There's many, many things, but you're going to need to wait on God for something. Genesis chapter 39, verse 20, the action of Potiphar against Joseph, even though he was falsely accused, begins a two-year period in Joseph's life. It's not like he was thrown in prison. 5 minutes later, he meets the cupbearer and the baker. 5 minutes later, they get released. 5 minutes later, the cupbearer has an aha moment and he remembers, and you know, this whole thing transpires in less than 30 minutes, like a program, you know, and everything is resolved and tied up in neat little bows. But most of us hate waiting. You know, we get things timed out. You know, I know how long, you know, this light will stay green on Bilby. You know, if I'm sitting in my driveway, not if I floor it and burn the tires or anything like that, but I can still make it from my driveway through that light. I mean, you know, because, and I probably do hurry because I don't want to wait at the light and things like that. I don't know if you call that speeding or not. I forget what it gets up to in that short distance. But nonetheless, we don't like waiting. And especially when things are unjustly put upon us, we don't like waiting. We don't like suffering the consequences for somebody else who messes up and who brings conflict into our life that we did not welcome, we didn't deserve, we didn't create, we did nothing. And we're saying, what gives here? And you still have to wait for resolution. But with this whole concept of what's going on, of are we willing to wait in chapter 40, it's important to know that while we're waiting, we're usually or often under the weight or the, you know, the authority of, so to speak, the force of two opposing things. The one is mentioned, for instance, in, we can go down to the end of chapter 40 and look at verse 20. Thus it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief's cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among the servants, and he restored the chief cupbearer. We know what happens to the baker, but he restored the chief cupbearer, it says. But then there's this other force that is working at the end of, but forgot him. There is the plan much earlier back in Genesis 37 of the brothers, and you know what they did to him. They got so jealous about these dreams that he was having, where he was the one who was the exalted one, and every one of the dreams, even the mother and the father, were bowing down to him. You know, and the brothers just thought they could not abide with that and handle that. So they, you know what they did? They sold them into slavery. So there is that human force of human intention, that human action, just like with the cupbearer as well. But then there's God's work on the other side, where Joseph later says in chapter 50, verse 20, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for, and you know how to finish that sentence, God meant it for good. So there's these two opposing forces, so to speak, in our lives while we're waiting, sometimes of human interaction and stuff that's they think are controlled. We think as humans it's controlled by other humans. But then there's also the work of God that is not bashing heads with, but working side by side with human element, you know, doing their thing and the work of God. Now, what we need to ask ourselves as we're getting into chapter 40 is, which one of those opposing forces are you going to be under while you wait? Are you going to say, I will place myself under the work of the humans and have certain attitudes that come out of that? And I'll focus totally the rest of 2016 on the work of humans. And I'll have various attitudes and thoughts, conversations with people, express myself in different ways, focusing on the work of humans. And you have been around situations like that. Maybe you have entered into a place in your life sometimes like that where you can't remember the last time you talked about the greatness of God. And you can't remember the last time you talked about, you know, his authority, and I still trust him. I know things are going to work out because God has promised, and I know things, you know, that he's going to work out his righteous will. I'm still living under the umbrella of Romans 8:28, and I'm not going to let go of that umbrella handle, and I'm not going to shift myself out from underneath it so I expose myself to all kinds of things. I'm going to stay under the umbrella of Romans 8:28 of, what's that say, all things work together for good to them who love God. See, that it connotates a certain lifestyle. If we say we love God, then we obviously follow through with what he says. If you love me, you will keep my what? Commandments. You'll do what I ask you to do, what I tell you to do. And that, again, has a certain lifestyle. So you think to yourself, well, between these two forces, which is stronger? Is the human action and the human intent, is that stronger than the authority and the work of God Almighty in heaven? And you say, surely you jest or speak facetiously. Well, I know, but what does my actions and my attitudes and my speech, what does it connotate? That I believe in the power of God and his ability and his ongoing work, that even right now he's doing something about all these circumstances that I have on my list of things to do, my God to-do list. And just like with yours, is he active or is he inactive? Are the humans more powerful than the divine force is the question. We will act different ways and talk in different ways to our family, to our kids, to our friends, have different attitudes that will be expressed through our actions and body languages if we believe one of those two things. And I think you understand that. So here is Joseph. And somewhere along the line, as he is waiting, he, long before Genesis chapter 50, verse 20 rolls around, he gets into, I believe that God is all-powerful, and I believe God is the true force in the universe, so to speak, and he's the one who is working things out, so I'm going to live my life in accordance with that. I'm going to pray in light of what I believe. You might flip over just to what you know is going to be happening. in Genesis 45. And that's the place where it says Joseph could control himself no longer. And he's crying. And he had everybody go out of the room. So there was no man there except, you know, Joseph. And he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it. And the household of the Pharaoh. Now, this is a result of believing. He's doing this because he believes what he believes. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." He wouldn't have said that if he didn't believe God was in control. They came closer and he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into slavery. Now do not grieve or be angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me." See, that's the way people who believe that God is in control, that's the way they talk. If we are focused on human this, human that, and I wish things were different, and I wish he would, you know, then we don't talk like this. "I'm your brother. God sent me ahead of you, for the famine has been in the land these 2 years." That's kind of how we know Joseph was in prison about that long of a time. "The famine has been here in the land these 2 years, and still 5 years yet to go. But God sent me before you, a remnant to keep you alive for a great deliverance." And now, "It was not you who sent me here, but God." That's a wonderful truth that is being put out there by Joseph because he believes what he believes. Now, so while you're waiting, and we're all waiting for something, waiting for somebody to get it, waiting for somebody to do something, waiting for something to be changed, waiting for somebody in a position, a judge or whatever, to change the mind, to re-examine. But we wait. And sometimes there doesn't seem to be any action. But the important thing here as we're getting started is to make sure we understand that it's time for us to decide, who do I believe about these two opposing forces is most powerful? Is it the humans that are most powerful, or is it God who is most powerful? Now, also, while we're waiting and doing time waiting under God's direction, we're encouraged here through the story of Joseph to be faithful. And I want to add in there, at doing your best while you wait for God to open a door. It's one thing to acknowledge God. It's another thing to obviously put the acknowledgement into action. Now, you think, well, how does Joseph's faithfulness and his desire to do the best show up in this story? Well, if you look at 39:21, what does God give him? It says he gives him favor, and the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the jailer. Why would God do that? Does he do that in response to Joseph's disobedience? Does he do that in response to Joseph having an absolutely terrible, horrendous attitude? Does he do that because Joseph curses God the most while he's in jail more than any other prisoners? No, he doesn't. It's because Joseph is being faithful. It's because Joseph is honoring God. He's thinking God thoughts. He's thinking, "You put me here. You're going to get me out according to your timing. I love you, Lord. God is so great." So that's an indicator of faithfulness. And then in verse 22, it says, "The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it." That is, he let Joseph take responsibility for all these people. Now, if you're taking charge of prisoners, and you ask all these prisoners that Joseph was in charge in, "Are you really guilty? Are you really guilty?" What are they going to say? You're going to say, "No, it wasn't my fault. It was this circumstance, and that's why I did it, because he did this or she did that, and therefore I'm not guilty." And usually a person who is in this kind of a prison, in confinement, in this kind of filthy conditions, is not a happy camper. They are not glad they're there. They're saying, "Well, but all that doesn't matter because I'm still, you know, getting $50,000 a year. I still have a house being built for me by the Pharaoh when I get out." None of that stuff is obviously happening. And so they're in a place where they're basically forgotten and they have no hope, except that Joseph is there doing his best possible job in a difficult setting. So we know he's faithful, and that's what God wants us to do, best possible job. Verse 23, notice what it says, "And the chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper." So that's another indication of God. When God is working with, in harmony with, it's usually with a responsible, sensitive spirit, somebody who is in sync and trying to stay in sync, excuse me, with God and with his plan and with an understanding of his will. Notice down in verse 4 of chapter 40, it says, the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, that is, of the butler and the baker and the cupbearer, took care of them, and they were in confinement, it says, for some time. It doesn't give you an exact time stamp, but it says some time. It's meant for you to think, well, this is an ongoing thing. It's not just a month. It's not just a little while. It's for an extended period of time. And we know from other things that it was about a two-year period. Maybe they weren't in there the whole 2 years, but nonetheless, it was some time. So to have a some time and to have good things being said about you after some time, what has to happen? You have to be faithful. You have to be getting up every day saying, I'm going to do the same thing that honors the Lord day after day after day. Look at 6 and 7 of chapter 40, where it says, and Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them. And behold, they were dejected. Now, if you're a faithful person who loves God and doing your best at that, when you see this and you see that body language, there's other things that kick in gear in your thought, in your conscience. You don't say, oh, well, if you're working at being faithful and doing your best possible job at serving the Lord. These kind of things stir you. And you don't think, oh, they probably don't want me to ask any questions. You throw all that stuff out. We too often say, and that's an indication that we're not being faithful and that we're not tracking with the Lord. If we think those thoughts, God doesn't want me to say a blessed thing. He doesn't want me to offer an encouragement. They don't probably want to hear it. Those are all excuses that we make up. We want to get away from that kind of mentality and into not being nosy, not bugging people to death. But, you know, in this case, they're in the jail. There's not too many places to run and hide or to go to. And he observed them. That's what a faithful person does, a person who observes. Behold, they were dejected. So what does he do in verse 7? He asked Pharaoh's official who were with him in the confinement of the master's house, why are your faces so sad today? I was just on the heels of something he didn't know that they were going to say because of the dream last night, but he asked them, what's going on? Look down in verse 12. What does Joseph offer them? So then Joseph said to them, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. So he offers them what he knows God has given him. Now, how does that relate to our life? Now, you're usually not going to be in a position where you're going to be given an understanding of a dream that somebody just tells you flat out, I had this dream, what does it mean? That kind of stuff is not going on as much. It can still happen, obviously, because God's power and his greatness. But normally, you know, we think of other things. Okay, what is it that I have to offer to another person out of my faithfulness to the Lord, out of my observation of how God has been working, out of what I've seen God do, even since this time I've been in captivity, even going back to Genesis 37 when he was a younger guy, and receiving these dreams that were predictive of what was going to happen in his life. So what is it that I can offer people out of God's work in your life, out of God's work in my life? You know, think often about that. If you're faithful and you're thinking about being faithful and offering your best in God's name to other people, you think about putting together what's happening in your life, what God has done in your life, with what you just heard was happening in somebody else's life, and you speak up. It is a glorious thing. I have observed that a couple of times this week where I saw people, Christians, encouraging other Christians. It was kind of like what they might have viewed as casual conversation. But from my vantage point, it was that person offering another person some good encouragement and perspective and thoughts that sort of reinforced where they were at spiritually also. And it was just a marvelous thing to behold. And I hope you're in on that on a regular basis too, talking, giving witness, so to speak, to what God is doing. Look at verse 15. What does he say? He says, for I was in fact kidnapped, as he tells his story, from the land of the Hebrews. And even here, I have done nothing that they should have put me into this, and notice the term that he uses, dungeon. What does that mean? Now, he's, again, what's he been doing? He's been helping, he's been thinking, he's been observing, he's been asking questions, he's been offering what he has. So we come to this verse, verse 15, and we know that Joseph has been faithful because of what he says has been happening in his past. Normally, we give this kind of a person the free pass to complain. Oh, man, I didn't know it was that bad in your life. I didn't know all those awful things happened. I feel so bad for you, kind of a thing. In other words, I will understand if you want to vent a little bit. But Joseph does not vent. He just keeps his heart and mind because of his faithfulness and desire to do his best on him. And then Joseph is forgotten down at the last verse in verse 23. And it doesn't say he flipped out and said, "That is it. I gave the guy a chance. Something good happened to him. He's supposed to remember for 10 minutes what I did for him, and he went and forgot. Bang, oh, that's the last straw, baby. I am kicking this Christianity stuff to the curb, and off we go." That's basically what has happened. If I get into complaint mode, if I get into focusing on the humans as opposed to the power of God, I'm kicking my Christianity, my belief in God, to the curb and saying that stuff really doesn't matter. It's not where the rubber meets the road, for goodness sake. So why stick with that? Joseph is here saying this bad stuff did happen, and I'm still focused on what God is doing. He's got, you know, chapter 50, verse 20, already in his mind. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Paul says, you don't have to turn to it, in 2 Corinthians 4, 7, 8 and 9. He says, "But we have this treasure in earthen vessels." Now, that's a wonderful statement. Talking about our relationship with Christ in him, in his body, the indwelling, the gospel that we can hold and earn as own as not earn but own, as well as, you know, the indwelling presence of God and so on, so that the surpassing greatness of the power of God will be of God and not from ourselves. Now, if you didn't have verses 8 and 9, maybe you wouldn't think that this was such a big deal to say what he said. But he says, like, you know, "We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despairing, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed." Was any of the stuff that you read about in 2 Corinthians 11 under the category of "this is fair"? Is that the conclusion that you come to as a human? This is fair. You buck up, Paul. I mean, it's just normal stuff that happens for a person who has given your life to serve God, plant churches, you know, go without many things, for there to be the three times he was beaten within an inch of his life and on down the road, you know, left for dead, you know, trouble, you know, almost drowned at sea and all these different kinds of, is that the normal stuff that we, oh, that's just normal Christian life? And by the way, if you do get saved, you can plan on being beaten three times and it is a glorious thing. We don't ever say any of that when we're talking to somebody who needs the Lord. So, Joseph is being faithful in that he's letting God control his attitude and letting God help him do his best work. And faithfulness obviously has its own reward. There's that little quote from Elizabeth Elliot who talks about when you hit the wall and feel struck. When that happens, she advises people to just get up and do the next thing, because there's always a next thing that needs to be done. Now, that is sometimes sounds a little stoic for Elizabeth Elliot to say that, but you think about what she went through, if you know anything about her life, and losing her husband and others, you know, down there trying to reach the Alka Indians and continuing to stay on location and do the job, finish the job of reaching these Alka Indians down there in the South. But the idea is not go silent. Sometimes we have these little zippers over our mouth. On the little tag hanging down at the end of the zipper is the capital T, which stands for trouble. And we make sure, okay, if trouble happens, I go silent. Zip, not talking to anybody, at least about God. Not, you know, doing, you know, productive stuff. I'm just going I can't believe that person would say that. And that's all we focus on. That's the last thing we utter. Or, I can't believe, you know, God would allow this to happen, or this person to change in this particular way. I didn't think things were going to turn out this way. I'm not saying we're ridiculing anybody or getting on anybody's case for thinking that. I have thought that as well, and you have thought that too. And what we want to do is get past that and just say, you know what, I want to just move back into faithfulness land. Now, another thing that Joseph does, as we kind of wrap this up, is that he is not only faithful doing his best, but he's also ready as he waits. So it says back there in 5 through 8, and, you know, one night they both dreamed a dream. The cupbearer and the baker, you know, of the king of Egypt were confined in the prison, and each one had his own dream. Joseph did not know that that opportunity was coming his way. But what does it say? Why are you so downcast in your faces? Why are you looking so sad? And they said to him, we had dreams and there's no one to interpret. And then right on the heels of that, Joseph said to him, do not interpretations belong to the Lord? Please tell them to me. In other words, he is ready. Just nothing has changed except an opportunity has presented itself. So while we're waiting, we not only are saying, I'll be faithful and do all these things that contribute to a faithful reputation, faithfulness to God, but I'll be willing to pay attention to the open doors that God gives me, and I'll keep myself prepared to be God's person, God's man, God's woman, God's kid, to make a difference in whatever setting I'm in. He doesn't say, you know, attract the attention back to him. Don't worry, fellas. You know, I'm an expert in determining dreams, you know, and get the attention. He says, I'm here connected to God. And isn't it God that makes all the difference? It's amazing some of the things that I have, can't even read the list. You can Google on the internet, what has God done through people in prison? And just throw that into a Google search or whatever search engine you like. But some of the most obvious ones are folks like John Bunyan, and what popped out of prison with John Bunyan? What's the name of the book that he wrote? Pilgrim's Progress. And that's not a series of good things. It's a series of hard things, and as well as God's blessing and direction, right? You know what happened with Chuck Colson? He got thrown into jail because of his involvement in Watergate. And he comes out a believer and starts the prison fellowship ministry that has benefited, you know, many and won many to Christ over the years. Is still active, and even though I believe he's passed on to glory. There was a guy from Germany, a guy by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who goes into prison, and out comes this incredible book. If you haven't read The Cost of Discipleship, man, it is an amazing piece that he wrote with some tremendous insight. You can still find copies of that thing around. It's called The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And man, God just gave him insight. Why did the Lord give Dietrich Bonhoeffer, this guy under, you know, Nazi Germany rule and stuff like that, this kind of insight to handle that kind of oppression? Well, it's because he was faithful and because he was ready. He was just open. So we stay faithful, we stay ready. Another thing that we can focus in on is to simply be bold. That is to speak up when we have opportunity. And that's what Joseph did. You got a dream, here's the interpretation. You need help, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to offer. Again, I'm not going to be one of those Christians who, in my, man, I wish my things were different, I'm going to go silent and stop talking about the Lord. So Joseph answered in verse 18. The three baskets are within these days, you know. And then he said, I don't think this last one that says after he'd interpreted, he asked the cupbearer when he gets free, knowing that he was going to be free because God had told him he was going to be free, to remember me when you get out of prison. I don't think that's a lack of faith statement. I mean, who in the world wants to stay in prison in the first place, in this kind of prison? And so, you know, it's all right for him to say, hey, remember me. It's just a common thing that you would say. It's not a lack of trust in God. It's not a dependence on humans and all those kind of things only, because he's obviously anchored in the Lord. But we have this issue that has come up before us in what are we going to do while we wait? Are we going to make sure we understand who is the one that's in charge? Are we going to put all of our faith and trust in the true power of the universe as opposed to the humans? Are we going to be faithful and still do our best? Are we going to be ready while we wait for the door to open? And while we wait for the door to open, are we going to be bold, that is, use what we have for God and others? That's why the encouragement from Isaiah 40:31 is there. Wait upon the Lord, and what happens? In the long run, you know, in the spiritual side. Maybe this doesn't happen physically all the time, because a person stays weak. The person who is trusting dies and goes to heaven. But there still is a run and not be weary, walk and not faint, in the heart or in real life physical experience. But the encouragement is to answer the question of what am I going to do when God asks me to wait at different times throughout this year, is to keep this Genesis 40 in mind and ask him to still use you to do great things. There is nothing that is more precious, I'm at least from my human perspective, than to see somebody who I know is under some kind of oppression, bad situation. I mean, if you ever want a bunch of illustrations of that, then go to Guatemala the second week of July, and you will see Christian after Christian after Christian showing that they have God alive in their while they live in the dump community. And they're still focused on how can I help you, what can I give you, you are an incredible blessing. There's still that outward focus about them. And it is an incredibly wonderful thing to behold. There's others in this room, I think, that would back up that statement as to how wonderful it is to see people under oppression doing the work of the Lord in such an incredibly powerful way.